Card and the Time Machine. May 2014. People who think of me as a sci-fi writer will not be surprised to hear that there is a time machine in my study. So far it hasn't transported me among the Eloi and the Morlocks or back among the dinosaurs. Fine with me. I'll take the time I got, thanks. All my time machine does is save stuff from my computer and provide interest and occupation to my cat. In Pard's first year with us, he spent a lot of time on beetles, because we had a lot of them. The box elder beetle is now endemic in Portland, having shifted its allegiance from box elders, which we don't have, to big leaf maples, which we have lots of. And so we have beetles, who live under the siding boards of the house and breed and swarm and creep and seep impossibly through non-existent crevices of the window frames into the house, where they mass on sunlit windows and blunder about infuriatingly, getting under pillows and papers and feet and into everything, including cups of tea and Charles's ears. Mostly they crawl, but they fly when alarmed. They are rather pretty little beetles and harmless, but intolerable, because, like us, there are too many of them for their own good. Pard used to see them as animated kibbles and enjoyed the chase, the pounce, the crunch. But evidently they weren't as tasty as Meow Mix or Dental Greenies, and anyhow, enough beetles is enough. He now ignores them as steadfastly as we do, or try to. But back then, when the time machine made its little clicky, whirry, insect-like internal noises, he was sure that it contained or concealed beetles, and spent a good deal of time trying to get inside it. It is 7.5 inches square and 1.5 inches high, white plastic, fortunately very tough white plastic, well and tightly sealed all round, and quite heavy for its size. All his efforts barely scratched the surface. As it continued to resist him, and his interest in beetles cooled, he stopped trying to open the time machine. He discovered that it offered other possibilities. Its normal temperature is high, quite warm to the hand, and I think it gets hotter when performing its secret and mysterious connective operations in putative virtuality or the clouds of unknowing or wherever it is it saves stuff. My study, being half windows, is drafty and sometimes pretty cold in winter. As he came out of airborne youth and began to spend more time lying around near me in the study, Pard, being a cat, found the warm place. He's there right now, although today, the last of April, my thermometer says it's 77 degrees and rising. He is sound asleep. About one-fifth of him is right on top of the time machine. The rest of him, paws and so on, spills over to the desktop, partly onto a lovely, soft alpaca Möbius scarf a kind reader sent me with a prescient note that said, "If you don't need this, I hope your cat will like it," and partly on a little wool fetish bear mat from the Southwest that a friend gave me. I never had a chance at the scarf. I opened the package at my desk. Pard came over and appropriated the scarf without a word. He dragged it a few inches away from me, lay down on it, and began to knead it, looking dreamy and purring softly till he went to sleep. It was his scarf. The mat arrived later and was adopted as promptly. He sat on it. The cat sat on the mat. His mat. No argument. So the mat and scarf lie on the desk right by the warm time machine, and the cat distributes himself daily among the three of them and purrs and sleeps. The other use he may have found for the time machine is purely, to me, speculative. It involves dematerialization. Pard doesn't go outside often or stay long unless one of us is with him. He can't sleep outside, can barely lie down and half relax. He remains stimulated, watchful, jumpy. He has indoors and those who share it with him pretty well under his paw, but he knows that outdoors is way beyond his knowledge or control. He's not at home there. Wise little cat. So when now and then he vanishes, I don't much worry about his having somehow got out the back door and then found his cat flap locked. He's somewhere about the house. But sometimes the disappearance goes on, and there is no pard anywhere outside or in. He is not in the basement, or the dark attic, or in a closet, or a cupboard, or under a bedspread. He is not. He has dematerialized. I get anxious and call his food call, ticky, 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 and rattle the can of greenies in an alluring fashion that would ordinarily bring him straight up or down the stairs without touching paw to stare. Silence. Absence. No cat. I tell myself to stop fretting, and Charles tells me to stop fretting, and I attempt or pretend to stop fretting and go on with whatever I'm doing, fretting. The sense of mystery is constant and oppressive. And then there he is. He has rematerialized before my eyes. There he is, with his tail curved over his back, and a bland, friendly expression suggesting permanent readiness for food. Pard, where were you? Silence, affable presence, mystery. I think he uses the time machine. I think it takes him elsewhere, not cyberspace. That's no place for cats. Maybe he uses it to open temporal interstices, like the impossible window-frame non-spaces by which box-elder beetles enter the house, by such secret ways, known to Bastet and Lichot, lit by the stars of Leo, he visits that mysterious realm, that greater outdoors, where he is safe and perfectly at home.